Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome along to the third episode of Le French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international Johnny Beattie and former France international Benjamin Kayser. We've got a massive guest coming up on the show today, so we won't dwell too long before getting him on. But how are you two, first of all? How's your week been, Benjamin? You settling in okay?
Yeah, interesting. Still the same stories about builders and work done and obviously their efficiency at keeping deadlines. That has no borders. That means French, English, whatever. They have zero clue of deadlines, which is quite frustrating, but we'll get there.
And Johnny, we'll get into your weekend in a minute, but we've got a slight deadline today, haven't we? Because I mean, you've got a school's worth of kids coming around for lunch or something. What's going on?
So the opposite of England is actually a French canteen strike today. So I think I've got about half the neighbourhoods coming around for lunch. So I'm on a deadline to get finished. Pick up, I think, 7 children and get them back here and get them fed because canteen's on strike and all other parents are at work. So picking up some slack for my neighbours.
Well, last week you were working for French TV, Johnny, and I asked you this week before we came on, I was like, which game did you do at the weekend? No game this weekend. What were you up to?
No, I had an amazing weekend. So there's this tournament that I've seen.
Thanks for the invite, by the way. Thanks for the invite.
It was last minute. And I've seen it during my rugby career over in France. So basically, Yann Delague, who's an ex-French international, played for Toulouse and Toulon. He organizes this water rugby tournament every year, which is a mix of ex-French internationals and then like some Babas guys, some internationals and people from around the world. And so what they do is they basically create a pontoon, which is a rugby field. And you play touch rugby with the old boys whilst drinking beer at halftime before and after and after and after. And you do that for 3 days. And so it's normally in 6 locations. They're in Perpignan, Toulon, they'll be up in Nice, and they'd sort of dismantle this pontoon and bring it down to different towns on the south coast of France. But this year they just did one. It was in Toulouse and it was awesome. So got to catch up and again, meet people and talk with people that I haven't seen in years from playing against them, like Fabien Pelous, obviously Yann Delague, Cedric Haymans, you know, legends, Ellis Ald. And then on the English side, the Baba side, there was Joe Rococo, Chris Massoy, Simon Shaw. So it was an epic weekend, really relaxed, touch rugby and getting wet, jumping into the river in Toulouse. It was great fun.
And they do a winter version, don't they? They call it the Six Nations in the winter. So you go from like 2 days in Courchevel and then Tignes and whatever. You have 6 locations and it's on my to-do list, 150%.
Well, we will discuss the top 14 action and look ahead to the European quarterfinals this weekend later on. But first, there's been a few kind of talking points that we can touch on before we get our guest on. So, Benji, one of your former teammates had to retire this week and he played his last game at the age of just 28. Have you got any good memories of Vito Kolelishvili and how hard was he? Because he got a load of yellow cards, didn't he?
Well, I'd... So Vito Kolelishvili is one of the strongest athletes I've ever met in my life. Like he was a freak of nature. Well, he is a freak of nature. He is strong. He is rapid. He's endurant. When I mean strong, I mean, I think he's got like a bench press, 190 kgs PB. He can deadlift 250 kgs 3 times. He's just a freak of nature. You get those big props basically that can lift, but they can't run. He can do everything. Hardest man I've ever met. It took him a while to get used to sort of being disciplined and all that. But then his way of playing was about aggressivity, physicality, and just being 150% committed. Unfortunately, he got a few knocks And it's that gray zone where, you know, do I come back too fast or do I take my time and this and that? And to be totally honest, and it's a sad story, but it's true, I knocked him out his last game. It was against La Rochelle. We both went because I was basically halfback. So he's not that tough, is he? I mean, no. But I was halfback and the guy, it's the typical thing. A guy runs between him and I. We both try to tackle him. You know, our heads swing around, bang. But I catch him right on the edge. Whereas me, it was like, I can't even remember. But, and poor thing, he just never came back. So I was really close to him towards the end because he then retired, sort of stopped in the same time as me. We were doing CrossFit together in Clermont and he was still just gradually getting there and thinking of, at 28, I was like, so you're quitting? He couldn't digest it yet. So he was like, oh, I'm just going to give my body just a little month more, 2 months. He knew inside. But that's the tough battles that I wish never happened to anyone, or at least when you're 35 and you've been there, done that, you know, it's easy. It's a super, super tough one. Good job. He's got good mates like Dato Zirakashvili, the big tight head prop who retired as well, who was really trying to be in his head, being, listen, just don't be foolish. You can play with a busted knee. You can play with a busted ankle. The neck or the brain is just completely different. And so he took the right decision. I'm really happy for him. I think he'll be relieved. He's going to go back to studying. And his dad is actually like a Georgian legend in terms of he's an actor. So he's massive in Georgia. And it's funny because you didn't really see that when you saw Vito smashing people day in, day out. And all the Georgian guys, his father is like George Clooney of Georgia. He's like huge and a good looking fella and stuff. So I'm sure his father will push him, you know, to do other stuff and business and like more sort of literature or poetry, or he's into that. So good on him. Fantastic bloke. Unfortunately, he's one of those stories where when the body says stop, you have to listen.
Well, I don't know what the Georgian equivalent of Hollywood is, but we look forward to seeing Vito on a stage somewhere, maybe, or on a screen sometime
soon.
Maybe, yeah. Some other bad news off the field. An ex-teammate of yours, Johnny, Victor Morrow, has been in trouble, hasn't he? What's happened to him?
So it was actually the second time he's been in trouble since he was at Cast. So Cast let him go after this incident, but he came out of a nightclub in the middle of Cast, I think got an altercation with a military bloke and broke his jaw in two places. The guy's been drinking out of a straw for 2 months. This is 2019, but he just got a 6 month suspended sentence. So again, he's got 2 years being looked after and surveyed by police to make sure he doesn't do anything else. He's now at Agen, still playing. They picked him up after Cass released him, but messy. And he's not the only one. So Lopetti Timani as well, Sitolecki's little brother, I saw he also got a big fine and another 6 month suspended sentence. So there's two blokes in France this week that have had nightclub issues, shall we say. But Victor, again, just daft. Like he's got huge potential. He's a massive bloke, a good athlete, and just sort of he's wasting it, to be honest. He's an absolute freak. Again, Victor is one of these guys, a freakish athlete. He's got the world at his feet, and if he just sort of applied himself, he could be seriously good. So disappointing news, disappointing for Cass to lose him, disappointing for him on a personal level, and obviously not good news for French rugby.
I mean, a little slap from Victor Moreau or from Kolelijvili or from Lopetti Timani is like getting a piano across your face for any normal guy. So it's tough. It really is tough because you're not treated like everybody else, but you have to because they're so big and so sort of lethal. They have like weapons in their hands and in their guns that unfortunately you have to tell them you cannot behave like everybody else. You cannot go out and act something stupid. You don't think, you know, the consequences can be absolutely ginormous and they have to be tough. And just for those who weren't completely sure who Victor Kolelijvili was, he's the guy that pushed Wayne Barnes when we played against Ospreys out of the line. And everybody sort of looked, what did you just do? But he was that type amazing of guy. It was just, yeah, it was. I remember Alwyn Jones looking at me. He's like, was he serious? It's like, what? And we looked at the replay. Yeah, fair enough. Okay. He's going to get a yellow or something. It's not possible. He literally pushed Wayne Barnes as if he was like a pack of chips or something and just chucked them out of the way. So complicated.
And also off the field, but on a slightly different note, they've already got a stake in the Premiership, the Pro 14, Six Nations as well. And now there's a rumour that CVC wants to buy a 20% stake in the top 14 for 200 million. Can you see that happening? And would it be a good thing?
It's a really funny one because I don't believe there's much money to be made in rugby as it stands, as it is now. But if these funds basically start saying, because they're purely, they don't care about the sport. But they care about the business side of things. But it's, I actually see it as a good thing. If people see that you can invest in money in rugby, if it's still controlled, so they don't own, they're not going for the ownership of the rules of the competitions. They're only going for the commercial rights. So they'll own 20% of Six Nations, let's say, but they have 80% of the commercial rights. So they'll do the sponsors and they'll do the broadcasting rights, which, to be fair, you need absolute professionals to do that. They took Formula One from being valued, I think, 1 billion to 1.9 billion. So if they can do that to rugby and actually give all that money back sort of to the clubs, we can actually finally create a system that is sort of balanced and actually real, instead of just being, like we said, an open checkbook for presidents at the end of the year. What I'm really scared of is the way they're going to get to that. They're obviously going to influence the way the rugby is played, organized, the structures. I'm afraid that the player welfare and sort of health is not going to be in the middle of the strategy, because you're going to have to travel a lot. You're going to have to organize crazy games. They're going to want to create the NBA. So it was only a matter of time before they looked at top 14, because top 14 is a giant in that area. So I see it as good and bad.
I have sort of the same concerns. And like you picked up on the F1 example. Yes, the turnover and revenue of the business shot up. But for fans, something like, since CVC's come in, there's something like a quarter of people have access or watch F1, because everything's on pay-per-view TV, access is stripped from fans. So from a fan's perspective, if they take over top 14, what's going to happen for a fan? Is popularity going to go up? Probably not. But are they going to make more money because it's commercialized and it's business? Yes. So I'm worried from the fan's perspective that it's not in their interest. Then I think from the player's interest, I think already in France it's difficult for players, because clubs are run by money men who aren't necessarily in it for the rugby and for the players, but they're in it for the business. Everything else is run by federations, whereas French rugby, again, has this unique situation like Premiership football, where it's run by money men. And I just think, yes, it might be short-term, fill the coffers, a bit of a financial boost. But I'm like, long-term, what is the knock-on effect for French rugby? We've already seen, for instance, this morning, there's been an announcement that the LNR, so the league, is going to go to war with the FFR, the federation, over the games in autumn. They said, look, they're playing 6 games. We don't want that. We never signed up for it, so we're going to court. So already you've got these things that are not right and are not sitting right in French rugby. And I'm just not sure how adding more money into the pot for the clubs and strengthening them against the federation is going to help French rugby long-term, or for the French national team, or for French kids coming through and playing the game. Those are my concerns.
You speak about the fans. I suppose one thing is, in France, obviously, the TV rights are absolutely fine. But globally, the top 14 is not available in as many countries as you might expect for a league with so much money in it. So maybe that's one thing that CVC would improve on.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, it's about time we got our guest on now, and we're setting the bar quite high early on, I think. We've got a real treat for you again this week, as we're joined by top 14 and international rugby royalty in the form of the one and only Sergio Parise. How are you, Sergio?
Very good, thank you.
We can see a little bit in the background there. It looks good weather over there at the moment. You're at Toulon now, so how are you enjoying life down there on the Côte d'Azur?
No, it's a nice environment here to play rugby. So especially when you are 37 years old, it's nice to, you know, spend your last year with your family and in a nice place. So I'm really happy to be here.
And you said it there. How is the body?
Sore and tired every day. I think when you play a lot of years, especially me, that I had especially a lot of games to play in top 14 on with the Italian team. Injuries and stuff is part of the job, you know. And when you arrive at this stage, you must to manage your energies and trying to, you know, you do everything to be available for the weekend. So of course, the training weeks are much different from the beginning. So now I'm trying to, you know, with the staff here in Toulon, to be smart and you know, don't push too much on training, even if, you know, it's sometimes it's difficult for me as player, even if I'm 37 years old, it's difficult to, you know, don't give everything in every single training. It's part of my, you know, the way to approach the weeks. But it's important as well to manage the energy to arrive, you know, in the weekend with, energy to play.
Is it your last year? Definitely. No, never say never. This is the last year.
Yeah, you must never say never. But no, definitely. Normally last year was supposed to be the last one, but obviously have this big issue that everyone trying to, you know, to approach. That's, you know, coronavirus may have a big impact in all sense, you know, not just for me in rugby, my career, but in the, you know, in term of, you know, our habits. So of course my idea was to finish last season, so hopefully I felt myself, and especially the body feel well to, you know, go for another year. So fortunately here in Toulon, the coach and the president were, you know, interested as well to continue and to extend in another season my contract here. So we were happy with that. And you know, of course I want to finish well this season, and hopefully I can, you know, finish well.
Was it strange moving down to the RAD after 14 years in Paris? Obviously, very different culture, very different climate and different people. But how have you found the move?
Well, it was really strange. And at the same time, was something that was not in the program, you know. I supposed to, and I want to, finish my career in Stade Français, of course. I think everyone knows my love from this city and this club. But the environment there was not great, and when everyone knows what happened in the last months with the club, with the staff, when everything was changed. And I think now the club is trying to go into the good direction, so I'm happy for that, because I really love the club. So it was not easy to move here, because you say different culture, different people, you know. When you live in Paris, Benji know very well, when you play in a you know, in a big city, and you have different habits. And rugby is not as popular, as really important as probably here in Toulon, that everything is going around rugby. So was really difficult at the beginning, you know. But you know, when you have a family, the quality of life here is really nice as well. My little kid really enjoy here, you know, swimming pool, have a lot of space to play, and myself as well. I found the club with of course. A big culture, and the people here around Toulon, they really support the team. So, you know, it's a different change. But even I'm 36, now 37 years old, I'm really glad to, you know, discover something new.
Just give us an insight, Sergio, into what changed at Stade Français. Because obviously you're there for 14 seasons, an absolute legend at the club. Was it more on the coaching side what changed with Heine Kamara? Was it behind the scenes with Hans-Peter Wild? Just give us an insight.
Well, it's going to take a long time to explain very well what happened, because it was a long process. But I try to make you simple. I'm a kind of player that I every time I share my views with the coaches, with the club, with the dirigents, I'm known as well that I have a long career in Stade Français. All my decisions that I make in my life, and the decision of well to play for a lot of years in Stade Français club, who I have the chance to have two top 14 titles, one Challenge Cup, but we spend a lot of difficult years, and I promise I can leave Stade Français many times in the past, and maybe go into another clubs and have other titles, so, you know, winning more games than I do in the last 15 years in Stade Français. But for me, playing for the club was more than just winning titles. It's important to, you know, when you put the jersey, you represent your club. And that's what I felt every time that I put the Stade Français jersey. And things changed, of course, when I arrived Hans-Peter Wiel, that is, you know, someone who is discovered rugby as well, was, you know, owner of a club with a big culture, a big history as well. And Enneke Meyer arrived with a new staff, and definitely for him was no easy as well to manage a club. He didn't really know the French Championship as well. He have a lot of difficulty with the language, and you know as well for the Latin players, Latin people as French or Latinian, when you don't have a good communication with the coaches and the coaching staff, it's difficult. So I don't go. I'm not gonna go into the detail, but in fact, I have another year in Stade Français, and I say for me, it's not. I just share my views with the coach, with the club. I say for me, it's impossible to success working like that, and you know, and every single people take the decision in that case. So I say I don't want to finish my career just be involved in my club, but in a bad environment, you know. So I prefer to leave, to be honest with my teammate, with the club. So I say I'm really, really sad to leave. I don't want to leave, but I can't go like that and finish my career in this environment. So everyone in this position takes his own responsibility. I share my talk with the owner. The owner makes his own decision. He give the confidence to the coach. And I do as, you know, a normal single player. Just if you are not happy in the place, you leave. So that is what I do. I was really sad. It was really difficult for me because I had said before, I was not in the plan. But, you know, I think in life you must do as well. Take responsibility, and sometimes you must take the decision that probably they're not the decision of what do you want to take. But I don't want to force the things, and especially I don't want to play. I never want to play in a place, even if it was Paris, if it was my club, it was home. I don't want to play in an environment that I don't felt comfortable, and I don't felt this, you know, people work with honesty around you. So was not a good environment to finish my career. So I share my views, what I say. And, you know, and after what you saw what happened in the last month was something that I unfortunately expect that will happen. And, you know, I think everyone take from this situation a lesson. I think for the owner, was important to understand that probably a club is important to be, you know, managed as from people that understand about rugby. Of course, the last director general of Stade Français was a guy who don't understand nothing of rugby. It was difficult to him as well to understand some dynamics. So, you know, things changed in Stade Français. So I'm happy the club started well and they win the first game against Castle. So hopefully for them, they have a good season. And for me, it's really good to be here and discover something new and finish my career, hopefully with some title here in Toulon.
All right, let me jump in, boys, because he's going to tell you half the story. But so I saw Sergio arrive in Stade Français when he was, what, only 19 or something like that, maybe, or 20 in 2004. And this guy fell in love with Stade Français because it was the right balance between top level rugby, but also complete lack of basically central focus around rugby. He's a curious guy who wants to do other things, who wants to be able to discover other things. And so he fell in love with that culture of rugby in Stade Français, where they promote that. They want you to be different. They want you to be edgy. They want you to cultivate a certain passion of, we're not like any other club. And that's what he fell in love with. And that's why, well, if you link that with the playing quality, then obviously you become a club legend. But so he fell in love with the idea that we are men in the middle of this group. And if you break the men spirit in the middle, then you break the club. And so we had highs and lows, like he said. In 2007, we won together. 2015, he beat me, so I hated him for a while. But they touched that core thing, which is they touched the humans in the middle. And so he can't really tell you, but when you get Hanneke Meyer who walks in and the first thing he says is, you guys are not fit enough. Well, that's a bit of an easy conclusion. You know, you guys are not fit enough. Just try to actually get what's top 14. What is it to play away? What is it to play at home? What does Paris mean? What does Stade Français culture mean? Why did Sergio fall in love with Stade Français 10 years ago? You know, these are the type of conversation that you should be having instead of telling me, not fit enough. Go back to the drawing board. And like I said, they could see the storm was coming. There was just a problem of fit. It just wasn't, he was killing it from the inside. So I'm not saying he, only Henniker, the whole organization was basically killing it from the inside. And so he had to go. So I've got two questions for you. The first one, Sergio, is that I heard, because when you were in Stade Français, what I felt was that not only did you have to play, but you had to be the captain. Then you had to be the best every week. And then every Friday, you had to speak to the president about this, about that. About that. That was heavy. That was much more than a single player should be asked to do. And so that's one of the reasons that sort of pushed him to be like, listen, this is just not fit for me. And when you got to Toulon, I heard that there was a 25-year-old Sergio Parisse that rocked up in Toulon. He's got a big smile on his face, who's always chatting, giving banter, like the Sergio that I knew when you arrived in Paris, basically. But and that's why you, because they just ask you to be a player. That's it. Just play, enjoy, mentor, obviously lead by example. And so that's my first question. The second question is, we talk about Henrique Meyer, but now it's Gonzalo Quesada, who's in Stade Français, who I knew that you got along really well. So does that mean that when you finish at the end of the year, are you going back to Paris to be part of the coaching staff?
Oof.
Bam. Big questions. the first question, of course, Benji, you know that when you're a rugby player, you're happy at home, you're happy with your family, you feel well outside of the field, the more chance you have to be good on the field. And of course, for me, in Stade Français was everything. And of course, all the little issues around the club in terms of physios that have problem in, I don't know, to organize themselves, players are not happy because they don't play. All the little issues pass around me in the club because it was a kind of everyone have a problem, they come in to me to talk. And because I have a big sense of responsibility for the club, and because my only objective was not for myself, but was for the success of the club, I trying to give every time this information, and I want to have every time a good communication with the president, with the coaching staff, because not for me, not because I'm the boss, and no, just because I want the club and be successful, not for me. And of course, I spend a lot of energy on that. I arrived sometime at home, it was empty of energy, and my wife say, when you're not happy when you arrive at home from the club and you feel like you are empty because you train, obviously you must play, you must be good on the field, but you have a lot of things out of the field to manage. What stage was too much. And of course, was not just Heineken Meyer, because he has his philosophy. Maybe, as you say, Benji, he have probably, he thinks we are not fit enough. And probably sometimes we were not fit enough, but it was not just that. And a successful club is a culture. I say nothing new. I think everyone knows that a club, Stade Français was different, everyone know it, and I was really happy to represent that. But when you arrive in the club, you must be fair with the people. So you say Stade Français was that with Max Wazzini, whoever, and now it's going to be another club. It's going to be completely different. Okay, you be clear, you be honest, and if you want to jump in, you jump. If you don't agree with that, you go out, and it's simple. But when you arrive in the club, you say, We want to keep the culture of the club. You want that, but actually you do completely the opposite. Well, there are a kind of big difference. So for me, it was not acceptable that. So I just be honest, and all the players, all the dirigents know that. So I'm not the kind of player that's gonna say, "Oh, Benji, you're a really good guy," and from behind say, "He's an asshole." You know, I say the things directly, and I don't want to be the friend of everyone. I just want to be a guy who, when you look at me, you know what I'm thinking of you. I don't want to be the guy who do the little smiles every time. No. If I like you, I show you. If you don't like me, if I don't like you, I show you. It's simple as that. And of course, when I arrived in Toulon, it was easy because I don't have all this issue out of the field. So just focus myself on play. I'm playing, and of course, I found myself very well. A young team, so for me, as a player with a lot of experience, was good to not trying to share, to try to give some confidence to the young players of the team. And for the second question, well, I'm not the guy who likes to make long term project, because you never know life. I supposed to finish my career last year, and finally I go for another year. You never know. Of course, I'm I'm really happy that Gonzalo arrived in San Francisco because I know the person, I know the quality, the human quality that he has, and I know as well that he's a really smart guy. Even if he have long speeches, he talks too much. He likes to talk a lot, but he's a good person, and I'm really sure that he's gonna have a great deal with San Francisco this year. And after that, I don't know, Benji. You know, I would like to go into coaching after my career, but I think it's a process as well. And as a player, when you are young, you don't expect to be on the, you know, playing every single week and be the best. When you're young, you work hard to maybe one day expect to play in the first team. And when you are right there, you must to play well every weekend to, you know, keep your position on the team. And after that, you want to play in your national team. You know, it's step by step. So I don't want to rush. I don't want to make a call just because I'm happy to. I want to have, you know, time as well to prepare myself for another kind of experience.
So I think you've been incredibly honest. And there's not many players that would say, look, it wasn't working, I had to move on. I think that's incredibly brave. And I respect you massively for doing it. How pleased are you now that Gonzalo is back at the club and the culture has shifted back to where it was? Because for me, you made completely the correct decision to leave. If you looked at Stade Francais games last year on the pitch, it was a disaster. But now, just that first game away in Cast, you see there's a belief about them. They play for Gonzalo. And obviously, behind the scenes, the club is doing better. So how relieved are you that A, Gonzalo is back, the club is back on track, and that culture is back where it should be for Stade Francais, your club?
Yeah, I'm really proud, and especially I don't have any regrets about my decision to leave. Even if I knew I have another year contract, I have another option as well. Just shut up, stay there, wait. But for me, it was first no fair for myself. Second, I don't know if the owner Hans Peter Bill will change his opinion about everything, or if he's gonna continue. So I can put my career, for the respect I have to myself and all my career, I can't accept that. So of course, it was something that I knew that gonna happen. So happy that the club now is changing, and was no really difficult to shift a little bit. Of course, Thomas Lombard, he knows Stade Francais, he knows the rugby championship, he know, and I talk with him as well, he know, you know, what's happening in the club. Gonzalo know really, really well the culture of the club. And it's a shame because the club lost 1 year and a half, and they had really close last year, maybe without the coronavirus, probably playing for going in Pro D2. So was difficult moments, but now you see that sometimes to change a little bit, you put the players in a good environment, you put the players with people around you who is honest, and Gonzalo was the perfect person for Stade Francais, especially what happened in the club in the last 1 year and a half. So of course, Stade Francais now with Gonzalo, he know the players, he know the club, he know the culture of the club. So the shift for me was not very difficult. So I was impressed for the winning against CAS because they had a lot of problem with the COVID. But you know, I'm sure that this year Stade Francais is gonna be fighting, you know, for being the top six. I'm sure of that, and of course I hope, because I love the club.
And we've spoken a lot about Hans-Peter Wild and about maybe what happened towards the end of your time there, Sergio. But I just want to rewind to the start, to his predecessor as well, because we've spoken on here and Benji's spoken about Max Cozzini, and you mentioned him there as well. So what was your relationship like with him? Presumably it was better, and he seems like quite a colourful character. So have you got any kind of memories and stories you can share of Max?
Yeah, there are some stories that we can share, but no, of course, well, Max was, and he was my president in Stade Francais. He's still a friend, still have contact with him. Was someone a nice person? You know, it's difficult to try to describe a little bit Max, because people from the exterior have just, you know, an image of maybe probably president a little bit eccentric. He do things that any president in the world do in a rugby club. He changed a little bit the view from the people about rugby. You know, a really sport just for men's. You know, when he bring first game with a pink jersey, was like a joke. Everyone say, I remember we put the jersey when playing in Perpignan away, and you know, like the people there, they're really, really hard. And anyone, every single club hate Paris. And of course, you go there, and then, and the crowd when you saw the team would go out with the pink jersey, was everyone, you know, joke about it. But when you see that, after you see that, well, first time was like, it's a joke, everyone's, but he changed the approach of the people around rugby, you know, the sport. So it was not, for him, was rugby, a rugby game was the part of a big show, a big spectacle. He bring another kind of supporters as well. A lot of women, little kids bring to the stadium, going to see maybe a game, but going to maybe have a spectacle before the game, see a rugby game, and after see another show. And, you know, make games we play like with 80,000 people for just a single, for a simple game of top 14 in Stade de France, plenty of time against Toulouse, Clermont, Toulon. And as a player, it's like, it's something that I was really lucky to live that, and was for just for Max. And he trying to, you know, he have a really close relationship with the player as well. You felt that he loved the club. His player were like his, you know, his little kids. He loved his player. And of course, there are a lot of funny things to share, and a lot of funny things that happen, and Benji know very well. But the things, when you are a player and you have a pressing that he's involved 100%, and he show you your frustration, he show you when he's happy, he show when the thing's going well, the thing's going bad, but he's every time he's there. And Max was that. He left the club. The club was everything for him. And I was really sad when he must to, you know, to leave the club. And Thomas Savard was the owner. So, you know, it was a difficult moment for him. It was a big, big shock. So I was really close to him, because probably he don't say too much publicly, but it was a big, big impact for his life, on his life, because Stade Français was everything for him. But, you know, I'm still a big, big friend, and definitely a best president I had definitely in all my life.
And those colourful stories about Max, we maybe can't tell. Max isn't here to reply, but Benji's here. He was there at the time. So have you got any stories on Benji? Can we embarrass him? Anything you can tell us? Go on, come on. There must be some stories about Benjamin Kaiser.
No, there's absolutely nothing, mate. I was an angel. The only thing, he can't say it because he became a little bit bitter when I started playing back row. There were so many injuries that basically they had to chuck me in the back row. I promise you, it was hilarious. The best moment of my life is when they picked me to jump in the line out over Mauro Bergamasco, who was another Italian flanker next to him. That was the biggest humiliation for him, poor thing. But it was those little things. Now, I've got a story to sum up Sergio, the way that he backs talent with a big set of balls, let's face it. So we spoke about Fabien in the previous podcast, Sergio, about, I think we share the same sort of view on him. Brilliant coach, huge brain, strategic genius, human-wise, a bit more complicated, to the point where he actually decided to put Sergio Parisse in 2007 on the bench for the semi. No, you weren't even on the bench for the semi. You weren't for the final.
Yeah. No, even on the 23 on the semi.
Unbelievable. He killed it. He killed it all season. But I'll tell you why he did that. It's because Sergio challenged his authority, not by being mouthy or about not respecting. Sergio was always very dedicated to the team, but just because he wanted to be creative. He wanted to think outside the box a tiny bit. And I'll give you an example. I remember that we had a meeting on the Monday after a game where Sergio was a bit flashy, you know, trying some offloads and trying this. He's like, Sergio, if I see you do one more chistera, like a pass around, just one more, I'll cut you out of this team for the rest of the season. You hear me, hear me? He's like properly threatening him. Sergio's looking at him. He's like, okay. And that weekend we play Ospreys in European Cup. And after 20 minutes in the game, he stands in the pocket and he kicks a 40-meter drop goal. He obviously puts it, and the first thing he does, he turns around, looks at Fabien, he's like, you know, with a cheeky little face. So he's got the talent, but he's backed it with a big set of nuts. And to be fair, he did it for the team, but he also did it to tell Fabien, like, listen, you're an amazing coach. You know your stuff for sure. But the players make the team. The players take the decisions on the pitch, you know, so you will never take out of me what I do best. exactly what you said. You want to change the culture of Stade Français? You say it, and then you decide whether you like it or not. Why? If you like Sergio, let him do what he does. If you want a machine who will just do pick and goes and not make it ever a mistake, then fair enough, no problem. Just go pick that guy. But if you want him, then let him be me.
Yeah, well, I remember, of course, to be out. That season was great because we play very good rugby and we arrived. I play all the games. I think I played the most part of the game of the season. And of course, when you arrive, you play semi-final and final. Was not the format was different at the time. So actually, the first four teams play semi-finals and then final. And when he named the team, I was not even at the 23. You know, I was shocked. I say, I played all the season. And I remember, you know Benji very well, I was like launching and he arrived just beside me and he don't say nothing, but he looked me like a kind of little smile in his face and doing like this with the head. And I still, you know, eating, and I look him and say, what do you want? Like, what's happened? And he looked me like that, say, I know you're angry, but you know, if we win, you are the best. The first thing that he tell me, you are the best bagger of the team. But if we win in the final, and say, Fabian, I respect you. I agree totally with Benji. You are a great coach, but don't find excuses. I think the worst thing that a rugby player can hear from a coach is an excuse. And you can't tell me, because it's stupid. If you are a coach and you tell me you are the best backer of the team and you go to play a semi-final without him, it's not a good show. It's not a good call. You tell me that you prefer another backer for that game and sounds more intelligent. You tell me, look, Sergio, for this game, I prefer to go with another backer. Okay, it's your choice. You are the coach. No worry. But don't come and tell me you are the best backer of the team and you are out because have no sense. So, yeah, it was a funny story because at the end and the final, I was on the bench. It was a difficult first half against Clermont in the first half. And in the second half, we get him back and we win the title. And after that, I remember we were a little bit drunk after the game, drinking in the club. And Fabien Galtier come for me and tell me, I tell you, we're going to win the championship. It's for you as well. You coming in the second half. And I want to say, shut up. And funny. But with the time, I remember like a funny story or something different. But, you know, when you are a player, I think that the best thing I have plenty of coaches in my life in Italy, in Stade Français a lot. You know, you're trying to take the better of everyone. And of course, for Fabian, definitely one of the best coaches that I have, technically, definitely not from the human point of view, and definitely not probably the best coach to manage a team in the long term in the club. So definitely coaching a national team, I think, is the perfect situation for him.
And just while we're on coaches, I suppose, Patrice Collazo at the moment, what's your relationship like with him? What's he like as a coach? Because he looks like, obviously, a very passionate guy on the touchline.
Yeah, a lot of passion. And I think he's someone who is going 100% on the human point of view, and especially in the motion. He really loves his player. He's really close with the players. But at the same time, he's really, really, really... you know, on training every single well, really exigent, and sometimes he getting mad and crazy even in training when someone dropped the ball, let me say, happened sometimes even too much. But it's his way to approach. But you know, he's someone who is honest. He's someone that you can talk, we can share, and you know, is for him here extend his contract, I think, another 3 or 4 years. So here in Toulon, there are a big you know, project for the future. Obviously, I'm not involved in because yeah, but there are a lot of young players, big centers who's gonna be available in a few weeks. And obviously, Patrice have not a big coaching staff because you have just two coaches with him, Julien Dupuis, who is a big friend. We spend a lot of years playing together in Paris, who is working with the backs, and Dazal Martini, who is a French guy who is working, he worked with France under 20 and he's working with the forwards. So, and Alexandre Marcot, who is Benji know very well, who is a coaching conditioning coach, who is there. So I feel well. For me, it's important as well to, I had a really honest a discussion with Patrice before coming to Toulon, and he tell me that he don't he don't want to pick me to the club at the beginning, but because the situation was a little bit different, special because I leave Stade Français at the end of the season, and I just come into Toulon not for for big contract, but just coming here to have another year and play. And I say, look, I come in here to just an extra player. I don't come in here to be a star or whatever. I just come in to work, to bring something to the team and to try to achieve the objective of the team. So we have a nice conversation, and I think he's happy on his decision. I'm happy as well to be here. So, you know, I'm happy to work with him.
Over the course of your career, there have obviously been lots of contracts, lots of negotiations. And it always intrigues me. Have you looked at Pro 14, Premiership, Japan, Super Rugby? Which other different competitions would you have liked to have played in? And who did you have the most contact with over the years in your career? And what teams piqued your interest, and who could have tempted you out of France?
Well, I found myself in end of contract a few times during this last 20 years. So, of course, I have many contracts. At the end of my career, in the last 3-4 years, a lot with Japan. Obviously, everyone know really, really, important in terms from the economic point of view. But was for me no even an option, because I want to play in a good environment. Especially, I don't want to make options and decisions just by money. I'm really great because I had all my career in Stade Français. I have good contracts in the club, even if. If I would like to win more money, I don't play in Stade Français all this year. I maybe jump to England or even Japan. I have a few contracts with at the time with Bath, Saracens many times, another club in France like Clermont a few times, and Toulon as well when Mourad Boudjelal was on the club. And we were really close to going to Stormers in 2008 or 2009. Was the same year when Max Uzzini say, and we find during the week, during the holidays, say, look, there are a problem. Probably Stade Français, we don't gonna have. The money to go into the next season. So I find myself in the middle of the holidays with the possibility to don't have a club. So I have a contact with the Stormers during the holidays. It was just a 1-year contract, so just to money was nothing, and it was just the experience to play Super Rugby. So definitely the only competition that I were curious to maybe play was Super Rugby. After, I have a huge respect for the Premiership, and of course it's, I think, and I have a lot of friends who play the competition, and definitely Benji as well, and big clubs. And so I know that probably will be for my career and a good experience to live, but and really, I have no regrets about my choices.
And we should talk international rugby, Sergio, because you missed the opportunity to have your farewell Rome appearance in the Six Nations because of coronavirus. So let's not beat around the bush. Are we going to see you in the Autumn Nations Cup?
No, definitely not. I have as well, obviously, a honest conversation with Franco Smith, who's coaching now the Italian team, and obviously with the federation. So, of course, both we really want to have a one last game with Italian jersey. But for me, it's important as well to do the things properly. I think the important thing now for the Italian team is a new cycle. There are great backrows playing as well in the Italian team. So now the priority is going this autumn with the without me in the, on the team, of course, and probably and hopefully if things and are better in all sense in February during the Six Nations, why not maybe play one last game in Rome? Of course, I want as well to be fair here with Toulon, because when I come here, I say to the club, I don't want to miss game with the club. So because, you know, the big discussion here in France about all the games that the French team must play and they all a lot of weeks with the international players, with the national team. So the clubs, they're not happy about it. So, of course, for me, it was a simple discussion with the club. I say, look, I want to play one last game with the Italian team. So, the idea is to have a last game, but for the moment, it's not going to be now in the autumn.
And as well as that, those postponed Six Nations games that we had in February and March, if we go back a year, obviously the typhoon in Japan caused Italy's final game against New Zealand to be cancelled. And around that time, like obviously you were very angry and there were lots of players playing their last games then. That was your final World Cup match taken away from you. Just sort of take us back to the emotion of that and how you felt at the time. With that and then the Six Nations, do you feel a bit cursed that your final games have been taken away from you?
No. Angry was not the good term. Probably frustration. Last game against New Zealand was not because everyone think that was my last game. So in my head, I knew that it wasn't my last game. I was just frustrated because the way that the game was cancelled. Because, of course, I was the first person that I say before, a rugby game doesn't care. It's just nothing in cooperation with the with the life of people. So of course, if the typhoon and problems and there were you know some danger to play, there's no way to play a rugby game, of course. But the only thing that I was a little bit upset about it was the way that was cancelled the game, and because it was last game New Zealand Italy and if you look that game, if you beat New Zealand and take 5 points, we'll be qualified. Of course, me, you, Benji, Johnny, everyone know that. That never gonna happen to beat New Zealand by 5 points. But in terms of equality, in terms of to be honest, you must give the team the possibility to play. And if not, you can't cancel a game. You can't have a different approach to cancel our game and different approach to cancel the other games. You know, so if New Zealand must play that game to get qualified, you'll be sure, and I repeat again, we want to find a time to play that game. You know, I don't think that World Rugby will say to New Zealand, well, I'm sorry, there's a typhoon, you can't play for Italy, you can't qualify, bye-bye, see you in 4 years. So it's simple as that. So I just want to be honest, and I understood at the moment that probably what I say, they're going to make angry or upset some people. But I doesn't care because I still thinking this is the truth. So I prefer to have someone to come into the hotel in Japan with me and say, we are really upset. No one comes to the hotel and say, look, guys, we are really upset, but we can't play this game. Even that for me was enough. You know what I mean? And especially from the human point of view, imagine that I take an example. Leonardo Giraldini was a hooker who got injury in the last Six Nations. He made huge sacrifices all to be able to go into the World Cup. He go into the World Cup. He were in the bench for the last game against New Zealand. We were training on Thursday. We finished the training. He felt well. We were in circle at the end of the training. So, we have a good training. We go into the game against New Zealand. And of course, I repeat again, everyone know that we don't have enough talent to beat them and win about 5 points. But in any case, you have a game to play. And just for him, for example, was a big moment to, play after the problem he had. And you have the coach say, boys, the match was cancelled. So, of course, him or Alessandro Gianni as well, who finally he can't play again. But me as well, everyone was cracked because was for emotional point of view, was difficult. And the way that they approach the cancel of the game for me was a little bit, not really honest, if you want to say. But was something now from the past. And after that, well, the Six Nations, the coronavirus, well, was something that happened. Well, I say, well, was not the time. I think I believe on destiny, so probably was not the time.
Just to add on that, I think you mentioned a few names, Alessandro Zani and Giraldini and stuff. I remember when we first met, there was a very, very tight unit in that Squadra Azzurra between Castro and Fabio Ongaro and Gonzalo Canale and all those guys. And I remember you boys would basically wait the whole season, whatever the tour was in June, if it was Canada, Chile, or whatever it is, you would just actually just love to go because it's almost a bunch of mates who are going like on holiday to play rugby and represent their country. And that's what sort of fueled you, right? During the whole time to make all those sacrifices, the love of the country and the jersey, yes, but also the love of the boys that are sort of in there. There was a lot of sacrifices. You mentioned that new generation, so was it Jake Pelledri and maybe Negri and all those guys. Do you think there's still the same sort of tightness in that new setup?
I don't know if the tightness, but of course there are guys who have a lot of talent. They are good on field. They play well rugby. They play good rugby, and they are you know, you mentioned Jake Pelledri, Negri, even Bramstein. They are great backers, and even behind them there are Dolph Italian in the back. They are very good. I think that generation change. Of course, you mentioned a lot of names. They are big friends of us, and we spend a lot of years playing with Italy. And of course, we were like the kind of nice group and really, really big friends. I think the new generation, they are a little bit different in terms of approach of group. They're still good players, but I think sometimes you must, you know, as a group, you must be more a unit, especially for them, for the future, for the young players that are coming. It's important, you know, to have as well the big influence on the team, have a big personality. I think that the big actually difference between the new generation, they are in terms of character and in terms of, you know, it's a big, for me, it's a big discussion, but because it's a question that I had a lot about what is the big difference. And sometimes if I say that, it sounds like, look, the old guy who thinks that before everything was better and now everything is shit. It's not the case. But I just say that, you know, you must have understood that before when we start playing, maybe Benji or Johnny, that the kind of sacrifice you make to arrive in a place, when you arrive, you must win every single little things. You know, when you're training, you must win the respect for the old guys of the team. And now the new generation coming and jumping and say, well, we arrive, I'm here, and me and you, we are on the same page. And it's not easy to explain. It's not, the new generation is living in a world who is different. When we started, we don't have the same influence that Facebook, Twitter, Instagram had. Some players who finish the game and jumping on their phones and looking if there are pictures of him on Instagram and they find some comments or bad comments on him. So when we started, we just be scared to go in Monday on the video and see a coach just going on play and coming back, you know, and seeing if you get in a mistake.
And the first thing you would grab in the change room was a beer. It wasn't your phone to actually check social media. To be fair, I don't think any young back row in Toulon thinks he's Sergio Parisse when he rocks up at 20, even at 21 or whatever, when he rocks up in the chair. There's still a difference. There's still a massive gap.
I don't know. But of course, in Italy, we have a back row with a lot of talent. I think they need as well to understand that working hard is just a part of the job. And I think to achieve big results as well, you must have a group who is like a unit and emotion for us as Latin, and I talk with Italian, I think for the French is like the same. You must have something more than just talent and good skills. And I think Italy now is starting a new cycle, and I hope that these guys, they come in like a unit and they can build, you know, for the future.
I want to touch again on that old group of core players. So Castro, yourself, Canali, Bergo, Masco brothers, legends now, but captaining that side and leading it through the past 20 years, how proud are you now when you look back of how far the Italian Federation, the Italian team has come?
Yeah, I'm really proud. And of course, when I started captaining the team, I was 24 years old, was in 2008. And I have players from like Alessandro Troncon, Perugini, or old guys, you know, from 30, 32 years old. So when you're captain at 24 years old, this was no easy. But in some stage, I think there was easy for me to have them beside me because they helped me a lot. Marco Bozzolami as well. A lot of guys who, they are legend for the Italian rugby. They had great careers. So for me, was the thing was easy that wasn't just teammates on the national team. They was friends. They were friends. They're still friends. And you know, we had games together, camps, matches in Six Nations, as Benji say, tours in USA, South Africa, whatever. And we spend a lot of great time outside of the field. And we go, when we go in into the field, we had a kind of between us was something that were more than just teammates. You know, we were friends, and we want to fight. And I think the people, we have a lot of good, bad results during this 15 year, but we have good results as well. But I think in any single game you see from the Italian side in the last years, you see players that were, they play for each other. They never give up. They fight until the end. And even if we go and play against England, France, South Africa, we knew that we were very difficult to beat them. But we go and we go again and we go again and do that a lot of years and do that with friends, not just teammates. Well, I'm very proud of that, but it makes me things easy.
And in terms of where Italy are at now, Sergio, and the talk around them, obviously there have been some bad results in the Six Nations over the last 5 years or so, and there's always talk about how Italy don't deserve their place in the Six Nations, or and then obviously the conversation turns to whether promotion and relegation should be introduced. So I mean, first of all, when people talk about Italy not deserving their place, how much does that hurt you as a guy who's captained that side for so long? And then what is your view on promotion and relegation? Do you think it should be brought in or not?
To be honest, I have this question a few times, and you know, sometimes when you react like you're not happy, it looks like it's someone who is, like, you know, a little bit arrogant, or I'm someone, I think you must deserve what you have. I think the people who understand rugby, he can see the Italian team today, he can see the Italian team 15 years ago, and I was there, and I saw the process, and unfortunately, Italian Federation probably don't put the good basis a lot of years ago, and he had the chance to have a lot of players during those years, myself and like Bortolami, a lot of the Bergamasco brother, Castro Giovanni, a lot of good players that they carry that team for a lot of years, but they don't work for the future. And of course, Italy jumped in 2002, I think, or 2001 in the Six Nations, not just because they had in a card, an invitation, say, come and to play. The team at that time, they beat France, they beat Ireland, they beat the team, and they have the credibility to jump in the Six Nations. First game against Scotland, winning in Rome. During the years, we had the good winnings against Scotland a few times, France two times. Wales, Ireland. Obviously, we don't have the continuity. We have the last 5 years, we don't win in games in Six Nations. And of course, it's normal that people ask if we deserve or if another nation must to jump in the Six Nations. Obviously, it's not something that is make me feel happy to understand, but I can understand that the question about our to Italy to get involved in the Six Nations. I think that Italy deserves to be in the tournament. I think that the other team that deserves to have the opportunity to play against big team, we make a take example, everyone talk a lot about Georgia, how they progress a lot, and this nation that actually do, he lot up a lot of progress. And as well, I think that they must to have a good, it's like Argentina. Argentina was in a place that he must to jump in a big competition, but he can't go into the Six Nations, but they still, losing with Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, and finally they shock big teams. They beat England, they go and beat Australia, South Africa, say, well, Argentina decides to go in the competition, they go in the Four Nations, and they since that they have a lot, they progress a lot, and in the first 2-3 years in the Four Nations for them was really difficult. So in the same say for Georgia, I think they deserve to play often against us, as we happened 2 or 3 years ago in Florence. They must play against Wales, Scotland, a big team to progress. And when they're going to show they can't be able to beat that team, probably they're going to have the credibility to jump. It's just my view, my thinking. If tomorrow Six Nations say, well, we're going to have a relegation, I say, well, no problem. It's not my decision. I think it's fair as well, but you know what I mean? Sometimes, because it's Italy and we have more chances to be last on the tournament and going in relegation or going in another in Six Nations B, is a lot of question. But imagine tomorrow you have Ireland or France having a bad year and finish end of the table, you think that the French Federation will say, okay, no worry, we go in, we play the, you know, it's not an easy discussion, but I'm open. I think it's important to be, and as Italian, I say it's not acceptable that you spend 5 years not winning games in the Six Nations. I'm not happy to say that, but it's the truth. And yeah, at the same time, I think we deserve to be involved in the tournament. We show during the years we can be competitive. We beat a few times good teams, but you must be, competitive every single year. And that's what happened. And I back again. I think it was a wrong programmation for the Italian Federation during the last 15 years.
That's great. Thanks so much, Sergio. And we didn't even get on to talking about this weekend's quarterfinal, but good luck.
Thank you. I think, Benji, you're going to be there. You tell me you're
going to
be...
I'm going to be there. I'll do the commentary. Okay. I'll be cheering.
If I do a shit pass or something, you say, don't worry.
I won't look.
Thank you, Johnny. Nice to see you again.
You too, mate.
Thanks a lot, Sergio.
Thank you, Sergio. See you.
Thank you, too. Bye.
I think he can speak English, right? He can speak really well. I did not know that.
Anything that came out of that surprised you guys?
No, I think it's the first time you sort of hear him say about the relegation that it's actually a discussion that has to be on the table. It's the first time you hear him express how heavy it was for him in Stade Français, and he has another dig at Fabien Galthié. You know, And he's pretty spot on. No, I think it's rare that you get him to speak for that long and that depth and that, like Johnny said, honesty.
Well, let's hope by the time we get to February and March, we get to see Sergio one last time in Rome. Right, let's have a very quick look back at the top 14 action from the weekend that we haven't spoken about yet. So we had Sergio on. Toulon were impressive, weren't they, against Lyon?
He was impressive. Running the show again, as he's done for years with Italy, with Stade Francais, running the line out, pretty much picked apart Lyon's line out, destroyed them at mall time. He was ball carrying, he was a nuisance. And Lyon didn't really have an answer. That was it. It was quite an attritional upfront game, but they absolutely dominated scrum time, mall time, bitch Lyon. The one guy I was impressed with, actually, really strangely on the Lyon side, was Mathieu Bastereau, in a move that I thought I wasn't sure if it was going to work, but the fact that he's now moved to number 8, he's in the middle of the field all the time, isn't having to sprint, catch centers. He's just making a mess of ruck ball, competing for ball, getting turnovers, smashing people. And he actually looked pretty good. He also has that role at line out time. He's the plus one. So he's a link man, or he's there. Like, he looked really good. And as a skeptic, having played that position, I thought, you know, like, you think of Sergio Parisse on the traditional role, you think he's not going to be up to it. But he was actually fantastic again for Lyon at the weekend. Really impressive.
And there's a lot of work and knowledge about how to control the game at the control the ball, at the back of the scrum.
Yeah.
And like you said, they got absolutely piled, Lyon, in the scrum. It was a huge statement from the Toulon pack, I have to say, because Lyon are renowned to be very good, extremely good line out. Karim Ghezal is now the line out coach for the French team. Huge influence in the Julien Purucilli in there, who's like an absolute line out guru. I think for the last 3 years, they had the best percentage on their own take. So it's a big statement. They've always been very, very good. And they had a very good scrum with their old scrummaging coach, who is now... was with the French team, Sébastien Bruno, and they got absolutely piled. And I don't know if you saw at one point, there's a try from Lyon 5 meters out after a scrum where they get absolutely destroyed, and Basta manages to sort of control the ball, blah, 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 and basically flips it to the winger, who then scores. Any guy who would have not known how to control that ball would have made a clusterfuck out of it, and he sorted out.
100%. And also, you're trying to go open side, but you manage just to pirouette out short side, which if you don't play the position, you don't know how to do it naturally. You don't know how to go with the natural turn of the wheel, but he did it. Picked up the ball simply, 2v1, boshed somebody off and set up a try. So no respect. He was really, really good.
And Johnny, you said last week you had all 7 games down for home wins, but you didn't see Stade winning away at Cast.
No, and fair play. I mean, they didn't have one preseason friendly. They didn't get to play their first league game, but huge statement of intent. You know, Cast won their first league game away from home, had 2 preseason friendlies, Stade no preparation, but you know, we touched on it with Sergio, the spirit and the culture and the bite that we just didn't see at all. Like last year, they were garbage. They were toilet. But under Gonzalo Caseda, a bit of a resurgence, a bit of a spirit, a bit of fight about them. And Makalu at number 8 was insane everywhere, ball carrying, tackling, man of the match. He was phenomenal. And they just looked like a team that's got the bit between their teeth and actually want to do something, want to challenge, which is great for the top 14. I thought they were outstanding.
And four red cards in the top 14 of the weekend. So Kirtley Beale's got a three match ban. I mean, is there something going on here? What?
It's a standard Saturday. What are you talking about? It's like the refs are going to get told off because there's not enough. What are you doing, boys? There's too many guys on the pitch. You know, they're trying to solve. I had a long chat with Joel Judge, who is head of refs for European Rugby and Six Nations and stuff, about the new rucking rules and all that. You know, he's just saying about making it fair and stuff. Well, the French took it in their own hands. You want to put a bit of space into a team? Let's just start throwing cards. Bang, bang, bang.
And Montpellier, obviously a bit of very bad news for them. In Andre Pollard's going to be out injured for a few months, but we did speak about them last week and their problems, Mohamed Hawass, and on the coaching side of things as well. They've started the season poorly, haven't they? So how big a miss is Andre Pollard going to be, and how big a hole are they in?
It's a huge miss, and they are obviously in a bit of a pickle. They get a bit of a break now with the European game, so time to regroup, but who's going to come in and play 10 for them? Are they going to pick up a medical joker? Again, firstly, really sad for him. That puts his Lions tour in jeopardy, which is really sad news for him on a personal note. But Montpellier, on a broader piece, you just think, you know, they haven't looked threatening. They haven't looked coherent at what they're trying to do. And two losses for a team with that budget and that power behind them is really disappointing. So it's going to be, a tricky couple of weeks for them during the European games, and they're going to have to come out fighting and show something in a few weeks' time. Otherwise, it could be a really difficult season for them.
Yeah, it's a huge blow. Philippe Saint-André already under a lot of pressure because he sort of got there to give a bit more of a Frenchness to this whole setup. And I mean, in top 14, I don't know about you, Johnny, but we were always talking about the two losses. Two losses is 8 points. 8 points is always going to be the difference between the top six and the rest. And so actually you think, oh, it's fine, we'll catch up. I am extremely skeptical that they will be able to catch up, because 8 points is ginormous. 8 points, like Sergio was saying, Stade Français can be contenders for top six. I agree. Except look at the teams that want to compete for top six. there's a monster that will not be there. There's three monsters who will not be in the top six. You know, so that means that every single week you need to play, win every single game, and you need three monsters to lose twice in a row to catch up. So that hardly ever happens. And so when you do 50-50, it's okay. But that's why when you win away, you need to win at home so that you double up. Otherwise, it's useless. And so losing twice, I think it's hugely problematic.
Racing looked good though, didn't they? And that's kind of thrown ahead to this weekend's Champions Cup quarterfinals as well. But I just want to touch on Finn Russell. I mean, it looks like he never went away over lockdown, apart from maybe the rig looks a little bit worse. I don't know. But apart from that, I mean, it's got to be the form 10 in Europe, hasn't he?
Mate, if you went to Dubai after getting chucked out of the Scotland team, I'm telling you, during lockdown, he did three times around the world for sure. He was in the Caribbean somewhere. I don't know. He clearly doesn't care. But I mean, he's on fire. Maybe we'll speak about it after. But I'm very worried for Clermont this weekend, who do not show the same form without the crowd as well. It just got announced they went from 10,000 back to 5,000. I'm worried. I don't know what you think, Johnny.
Yeah. Firstly, Finn, the Muscle Russell, as he was known back home. I just watching him is an absolute joy at the minute. It seems like his rugby IQ and the time that he has on the ball and picking out his options, his decision-making, all of it is awesome. And that's it. With him powering, and then you've got Kirtley Beale, Vakatawa, Zeebo outside him, a pack that's going forward. You said form in Europe, but in the world right now, for me, there's not many people on his level. And he's just outstanding to watch week in, week out. He drives Racing around the pitch, picks out the right people, the right timing, and he's a gem for them. He's been phenomenal.
So come on then, Benjamin. First of all, what happened to Clermont at Bayonne, and who's going to win? Clermont Racing this weekend?
Well, for one, number one, what happened in Bayonne is that they got opposed to a team who had more spirit than them, which is a very, very big problem, because that's what Franck Azema said after the game. That was basically his conclusion. You can win, you can lose, no problem. You can make mistakes. But if you don't want to fight more than your opposition, it's going to be very problematic. And he says only two games in, to then be talking about lack of involvement and commitment is very, very worrying. They physically, they were much better. But they, I mean, the first Bayonne try, just to sum up the game for you, it comes in after, what, 5 or 10 minutes of play. And Clermont are just going through the phases. They're going forward. And then Rouet, the little tiny French-Spanish number nine who plays for Bayonne, who is the smallest dude I've ever seen on a rugby pitch. He is tiny. He's a tiny little pickle. and he counter-rucks. Sorry, first he jumps on Morgan Parra just to the edge, spills the ball, and then he helps to counter-ruck, catch the ball again, and they play in the blind side and they score an amazing try. So they were clearly, clearly more upfit than Clermont, who ended up in leading, I think, 19-7 around the 60th minute and lose the game 21-19. So it's a huge game for huge win for Bayonne, very worrying for Clermont. After last week, two men down, Toulouse still put them under pressure, could have won on the last minute. I was like, all right, Toulouse are very, very good, so you got to be careful, and it's the start of it. And Clermont had a few injuries. I'm just scared because Racing are hot. The one thing that could have helped Clermont is full pack stadium. You know, we're going to go and destroy them. You get that extra edge and stuff. 5,000 people. It's going to be amazing. It's better than nothing. It's bigger than us. Okay, I get it. But it's still not the same. And it's knockout rugby. So I am very worried. I think it will be a tight game. And Racing show or oppose a huge threat for Saturday.
Again, though, mate, they still can't defend them all. Like, it pickles my mind. They got absolutely shafted by Toulouse. Two men short at mall time, and then against Bayonne, two soft pushover tries in the corner. Like, it just
proves you how much I used to do, right?
Exactly. They're missing you. They're missing you, mate.
I was the one organizing on the side. Get in there. Come on. Just
harder.
Yeah, but not doing anything.
It screws my mind. Also, when you think of the quality and the depth and the money that's behind the per player in that Clermont side versus the Bayonne side, again, we talk about it heaps in France, but the spirit, the reaction, the fight, you talked about Ruit, little guy, but feisty. It's just incredible that Clermont cannot snuff out Bayonne. And again, like you said, now at home, yes, but not on form. A huge game for them this weekend. It's going to be hard. Very, very hard.
And we haven't even spoken about Toulouse yet and just how good Cheslin Colby was again at the weekend. But are they going to have too much for Ulster?
Freak of nature, Cheslin Colby, I'm telling you. He is a freak of nature. I mean, he's unbelievable. I watched their game as well. I think they were... What makes me happy is that... optimistic for Toulouse is that I would have been worried if fitness-wise, I thought they weren't ready yet just because Pro 14, no, maybe not Pro 14, England started before, right? But Pro 14 has pretty much have got the same number of games as them, I think. But they seemed, you know, you just didn't know how fit they were going to be. Two men down, last minute, they can win it in Clermont. That means they're fit. Six-day turnaround, because they played the Sunday, they played again the Saturday. Six-day turnaround, and they smoked, who was it, La Rochelle. Cheslin Colby was phenomenal. They've got a great side. They still rotated their sides. Both locks who got red cards against Clermont because it's France. Hey, only 1 week suspension and they're back in. You can't do this to us. You know, and they're all back in. I reckon they will be much too big and much too good for Ulster. They just need to sort out a little bit their discipline that was quite poor against La Rochelle. Obviously, two red cards and a yellow against Clermont, so that needs to be sorted. But I think there'll be too much for Ulster.
I agree. I think Toulouse absolutely 100% at home should be Ulster. My worry for Clermont is that Racing coming and Racing could maybe sneak that one away from home. With Finn fizzing balls left, right and centre as he has been doing, I think that could be an away win for Racing.
You agree, Benji, or are you going with your man?
No, I don't agree on that one. I'm very worried. The reality is what Johnny said, but my heart and what the heart can bring, even with only 5,000 crazy fanatic fans, I really do think that if they get their act together, they can do it. And especially, you know how you can sort of play on mind games? Racing came to beat us 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. When we had that crap season where the only thing that we had was that home quarter. It was the toughest season, honestly. We had 17 or 19 injuries, I think, at some point. Very, very complicated. And we just lost to Racing at home in the quarter. And I think that will be the fuel of all week blacklist payback time. And you know, Johnny, that however bad you are during the couple of weeks before, when you get in the mode of payback time, and there's quality, obviously, to back it up, it can make fireworks. So that's the only thing that I'm hoping for. Fingers crossed, because I do believe they can do it. But at the moment, on paper, very complicated.
That's going to be one of the games of the weekend for sure, Clermont Racing. Thanks, Benji. Thanks, Johnny. And thanks to all of you for listening as well. Don't forget to hit subscribe on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. Leave us a nice review as well. And you can watch us on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Au revoir.
Father,
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.